Okay. So I sent a mail saying the homework socket is open. I put in homework problems. For the data integration and also statistics stuff, okay. The whole point of these homework problems is to make sure that you actually go and read some of the stuff that we are discussing in the class. So one point I made in the email is that first of all, so this is the last homework, and I'm not exactly sure when it's going to be due, partly because I am considering actually making the homework for subsume the second exam. So you'll just have homework four, which will have a higher weight, and I'll keep adding stuff until I get sick of it, and then and it'll be due probably right after the semester is over or something. So I'm not going to give you a long lead time. So, and also I think given that every week there's a new topic, you know, you're better off actually working on the problems as they come along. Okay. And also I mentioned in the email that since it's also, this particular homework is also going to double up as probably the final exam, the second exam, I want to make sure that you guys just do it yourself. Okay, I mean, I think it's sort of, that's the expectation for all the homeworks and the exams, but it's probably more important for this homework. Okay, so you're welcome to talk to me and the TA, but, you know, do it yourself. Okay, and then that's the topics that are coming up. So today I'm going to start talking about the intersection of databases and information retrieval. And there are a variety of sub-problems that you can look at in this intersection. And, you know, I look at some of them. Ultimately, the point is to kind of give you a feel for the sorts of problems that are important in this, you know, if you want to do, if you want to look, consider how does information retrieval-based query processing and database query processing, you know, when they're booked together, what sort of interesting issues come up. I am probably going to spend some time next class on collection selection, which is essentially purely text database integration. Remember in the major data integration thing, I pointed out there's a data aggregation, there's a collection selection, and then there's overall data integration. So it's an easy problem to understand, and it's sort of, it's also basically the way most of the meta search engines work. So the ones which call multiple other search engines to answer your queries work. So it's worth talking a little about that. Next week, I'm going to spend some time on social network analysis. This is really related to an email that I sent long back in the beginning of the semester. There is a mail on social network analysis in the email thing, okay? So I'm just going to discuss this in the class. There are lots of neat sub-ideas there, and then we'll talk about those. And basically, it's the Kevin Bacon game, small world phenomena, and also in a social network, how do you decide who is the most important person, okay? So for example, measures of centrality, you know, who is the most central person? And for example, do you guys know that in the Kevin Bacon game, who is the most central person in the Kevin Bacon game? Turns out, the Kevin Bacon game is this issue of given Kevin Bacon and yet a different actor, you have to find a series of movies such that Kevin Bacon and actor one acted in this movie, actor one and actor two acted in this movie, actor two and actor three acted in this movie, actor three and the other actor that you wanted to combine with Kevin Bacon acted in this movie. So the movies connect up actors. That's the Kevin Bacon game, okay? And it turns out that in the Kevin, if you consider the, you know, the network, that basically it's a social network. Movies are the place where the actors are interacting. If you consider that humongous network of actors connected up by movies in which they acted, I think Rod Steiger or somebody winds up being the most important person. Kevin Bacon is not the central person in Kevin Bacon game, okay, because he is the one who is closest to many, many people. Okay, in a social network, for example, it turns out the most important thing is how many people do you know? How many people can you get access to very fast? And then we'll talk about this and also talk about how can you use social network analysis for this course, in particular, propagating trust. Okay, if you, you know, even things like collaborative filtering, you might take recommendations by certain people much more seriously than certain other people. Okay, I mean, if you have a home and you are trying to get something repaired in the home, you're not likely to just look at the Yellow Pages and pick up somebody who's going to do this. You're going to call up a couple of your friends and ask them, do you know somebody? And they'll say, oh, we don't know anybody, but this other friend of ours got some work done by this particular agency. And then suddenly we now think that that agency is more useful than the rest of the Yellow Pages. Okay, that's because we are propagating trust. And then, you know, once you start doing propagation of trust, you can also do it in the context of things that make sense in the collaborative filtering, things that make sense. In fact, people have been talking about using this for spam filtering. So you would accept all the mails from people that you know, and you also accept all the mails from people that are like a couple of levels away from, you know, so they are known to somebody else, not necessarily to you. You know, so these are neat ideas, and so it's worth talking about them. So, you know, we'll talk about that. Based on how that goes, I might wind up talking a little about web services. It's a pretty flaky topic, but there are 1.5 million conferences on web services, so we should probably talk a little about that. And then the very last class, the entire class would be, or a large part of it, would be interactive review summary. And I'll talk more about it as time comes along. Okay, so that's how the rest of the semester is going to be. Any questions? Yes? There is no final exam, that's it. Okay, I mean, if that's what I do, then there's no final exam. And if this is a problem for some people, please let me know. I mean, if you don't want to say it in the class, send me an email or send it to me anonymously or whatever. I'm thinking that this should be a reasonable thing, because given the number of new topics I wound up doing, there is not enough time for me to have the homework done and then set the final exam. So it might be more useful to do it this way. Okay? Any other questions? Okay. So what I'm going to do today really is use in bridging databases and information retrieval. And so those are two things that we learned in this class, right? I mean, you know, we are actually interested in web, but first half of the course was really information retrieval as applied to web. The second half of the course is databases as applied to web. Okay, and one of the interesting things is, in the context of web, these people started taking each other much more seriously, database community and information retrieval community, started taking each other more seriously, and have realized that, in essence, there are a lot of common problems, the problems that cross over from one field to the other. And as I may have mentioned in some class earlier, one of the interesting things is because of the web, the profile of the users that are accessing databases has changed, for example, okay, such that more people are into keyword queries than into SQL queries. And if all your customers want keyword queries and what you have is an SQL support, you are in trouble. So you need to find out a way in which you can provide keyword query support, for example, to users. So it looked as if in the very beginning of the semester I mentioned that structure is useful. Okay, the more structure you can find in the data, more interesting query processing you can support, right? Which is true. But on the other hand, I'm saying even when you have structure, sometimes what you want to support is keyword queries. So having databases and supporting keyword queries looks almost sort of oxymoronic thing, okay? And the point I'm making is you're forced to do that because most of your users want to ask keyword queries, and for those guys you need to support keywords. Okay, so that's one point. But anyway, let's look at some obvious connections between database and IR. Not actually connections, but complete disconnections. So the application for databases is accounting and financial support. In fact, I've read this. I think I may have mentioned this thing called Lowell report on database research. You know, I may have sent you a copy of that. Database guys get together every once in a while and try to see where they are going, what are the new research directions, and so on. And the most recent one, I think, was a year and a half back in Lowell, Massachusetts. And if you read that, it's actually, if any of you are interested in any sort of research interest in database-related areas, you should look at that, because you would see what are the common complaints by the people doing database research about their own profession. Okay. And one of the points they make, of course, is database is boring because the applications that traditional databases have looked at are basically financial applications. And it's very hard to get undergraduates excited up until the time they're about to take up a job and realize that all jobs are boring if they're not doing interesting stuff. So so they were talking about we need better applications. Okay, and one of the interesting things is better applications may well mean different kinds of data. So, you know, the canonical application for database is accounting, for the information retrieval is libraries, and then for the data type is numbers and short strings, and this is just all text. So there is text in normal databases, but normally short strings, okay, and there's a text. Foundation for query processing is sort of a query algebra, and, you know, here, as you know, I mean, you know both of these by now. Okay, I'm just bringing up things that you already know in a table form. Probabilistic and statistics-based foundations as to this idea, full idea of what are the query answers. Okay, and the search paradigm is Boolean retrieval. There are exact queries, and you have all the results have to be given for those queries, and whoever gives them fast wins. Okay, and the whole query paradigm for information retrieval is ranked retrieval. There is no such thing as an exact query. There is no such thing as an exact set of answers. Okay. Remember in the beginning of IR, we had this person with a cloud in their head, and they're trying to convert that cloud into some number of keywords. And you're hoping from the keywords how to retrieve the cloud. You know, and that's basically the relevance metric. Okay. So the basic idea is the whole idea of relevance-based query processing and ranked retrieval is very important from the IR point of view. And anytime you're doing that, you're doing more of IR stuff than database stuff. Database guys are much more interested in getting all the results as fast as you can. I understand that much of this stuff, you know, some of these differences are not as stark a differences, given that we have been looking at the fact that in the context of integration and online source scenarios, you pretty much have to give up on all results. For example, last week I think we were talking about multi-objective optimization, where you want to get as many tuples as fast as possible, which changes the way database query processing changes. But the underneath it all, database query processing, the canonical example that you would have learned about in 412 would be this. And if there is a 412 for information retrieval, this is what you would learn. Okay, so clearly you have seen in this course that you want to be able to combine these, and I think this is just the same thing in a different, I mean, this is my slide, the other one is somebody else's slide. So databases allow structured querying, and queries and results are different objects in databases, right? And soundness and completeness is expected, okay? And then user is expected to know what she's doing. And on the other hand, IR only supports unstructured querying, basically keyword queries. Queries and results are both documents. This is neat. Actually, sometimes it's nice to be able to see that queries and results are all documents. You know, it's the same format. For those of you into Lisp, you know that one of the neat things about Lisp is the programs and data have the same exact syntactic format. That's why it's easier to write new programming language interpreters in C, in Lisp, very easily. Okay, and so that's an advantage, that's sort of a meta advantage, that two different syntaxes are the same. Okay, queries and results are both documents. High precision and recall is what you're hoping for, not soundness and completeness. Okay, and then finally, you sort of kind of assume that people can ask pretty much anything and expect anything else back in return. Okay, so it's this business of trying to capture what the user might be looking for, even if in fact their keywords are wrong. Okay, and so now the reason you want to combine these, I think in this particular course we already saw several reasons, and you have them in the back of your head. Okay, because after all, you know, normal web search is IR based, and then if you start doing extraction of information and start putting structured tuples, then you have database style support. Okay, and so you are kind of combining both in cases. And from, even if you didn't care about this course in terms of web, one other possible reason is, you know, things like, there are many databases where there are large text-oriented fields. Okay, and you may want to be able to do querying, to support effective querying on that sort of data. There are lots of applications of that type. So news archives, product catalogs, you know, bunch of other ones, all of which wind up having some non-short string text. So basically, large fields are big text chunks. Okay, so you need, and then here is, this is something that you can easily understand, which is basically, even if you have text data, you might do information extraction. This reminds you of what specific topic we talked in this class, this particular slide. Here, what they did was, they looked at this example and computed, basically extracted facts and stored them in a database. Now, the extraction can be buggy because you're doing the extraction from natural language text. Okay. And so they're not very sure, so they would wind up putting some uncertainty along with their fact. See, this probability here really is, it's partly based on the extraction incorrectness. So where did we talk about something like this? What? No. I mean, we actually talked about an application which does exactly this, except not in CIDR. What? Collaborative. What? No, we talked about this application C by OC, where we were trying to pick up interactions from text abstracts of medical text abstracts, right? And then those interactions may have been wrongly extracted. Remember, and then we talked about how to deal with these facts. I mean, we did put them, you got the structured facts and put them in tuples, and the, one of the challenges is, A, your actual interaction could have been wrong. Okay, I mean, your extraction could have been wrong. I guess I see somebody else pointing out, no, it all, that's true too. So, in essence, whenever you extract a tuple, you need to sort of figure out how correct is this extraction, okay? And in the case of C by OC, we were having users vote on it. In the case of KnowItAll, you're using Google to vote on it by asking it, you know, Seattle plus city divided by Seattle in terms of number of hits. Okay. So now when you do that, you wind up having a bunch of facts with probabilities. Now, nobody ever told us about facts with probabilities in relational databases. What do we do with these guys? Okay. This opens up a new can of worms in terms of basically, one of the interesting things that this brings up is, you want not only to just give tuples, but probably rank the tuples in the order of the most probable to least probable. Right? Now, what if I wound up the tuples that I'm returning to the user are sort of based on some complex join over these three tables? and each of the tuples taking part in this join have probabilities, and I need to compute the new probability for the tuple, the results I am returning. Okay, bad enough. But what if the user query is actually an aggregation query over some join? Do you know aggregations, right? Aggregation query over some join. And so now I'm taking multiple multiple uncertain facts, adding them all up, and the question is, what is the certainty of the aggregate answer? Now, where did you do all this stuff? Probability statistics, and if you took 471, reasoning with uncertain information. Okay, so the question is, basically you have to transfer all that stuff here. You need to be able to support reasoning with uncertain information, except in large scale now, except in, you know, basically database scale. Okay, and you want to use that particularly to do, I think, the connection to other the other examples that we'll be talking in today's class is this idea of ranked retrieval. It's not just enough to find all tuples. You want to rank them. And in fact, you want to find the tuples in the order of their importance. Now, so if you have ranked retrieval coupled with impatient users, then in essence, you want to get high ranked tuples as fast as possible and low ranked tuples later. So you have the previously you had this coverage times gamma power latency. That was the model we were talking about last time. In fact, you want to talk in terms of relevance times gamma power latency, where relevance not all tuples are given the same weight. Okay, the relevance might be the probability, for example. Okay, so these sorts of applications just open up the notion of query processing for databases a lot more. Okay, people have talked about, for example, handling probabilistic data in databases for the longest time, but they didn't have to do much about it. You know, they can always say, well, you know, if major applications you are looking for are financial data, then you don't really need to do too much about it. Okay, but now we have a lot more reasons because, you know, for example, because of the web. Okay. So those are sort of the motivations as to why you want to combine, bring in influences from databases and information retrieval together. Okay. In essence, actually, there are several problems that can be actually brought in. Let me see if I have this one slide. Okay, I'm not sure this is any different from the other one, but so I think the common patterns that come up when you bring together database and, you know, IR, basically a data which is both textual and structured together, are issues such as how do you handle textual attributes in a database? Okay, so there is, you don't want to talk in terms of equality anymore, you want to talk about similarity between attributes. Okay, how do you, so that's one of the things that we'll talk about. So if you have databases with large textual attributes, okay, and they're kind of spelled, they are written up differently in two different tables. Okay, then you want to see, for example, if you're trying to join these two tables, previously the natural join would be to equate two columns. Now we may want to say similar. Okay, the moment you start talking about similarity, the issues of how do you define similarity come in. How do you define similarity over particular types of attributes? And the second issue is how do you do the query processing such that the highly similar tuples are joined first and less similar tuples are joined later? You can always do it in this way, wherein you find the entire join and then compute for each tuple its actual similarity. But that's too costly. Okay, so you want to do it more efficiently. So we'll look at that issue, that sub-problem. How do you handle textual attributes in data processing? We'll also look at this other issue, which is how do you support keyword querying over databases? This is what I've been talking about earlier. So if you have an actually relational database, but your users only want to do keyword queries, how do you support that? Okay. And in some sense, it looks as if there is no problem here, and it turns out there is a problem, and there's actually an interesting problem, because in most databases, you wind up keeping connected piece of information split over multiple tables. A connected piece of information is split over multiple tables, and in databases 101, you are taught that that's a good thing to do, because that way you can avoid redundancy. So if you need to change a piece of information, you change it in just one small table. This is the whole notion of normalization. And it's felt over all possible joins over these tables. Okay, but now that you did this, and people are asking keyword queries, you need to, you know, in essence, try to recompute the entire universal relation and then find out which are the right tuples in which these keywords appear. And again, the question is, how do you do it without having to recompute the universal relation? Okay, so we'll look at an answer for this, and a specific piece of work which does this, and that actually again gives you an idea of how keyword querying is something that's very directly related to information retrieval, needs to be to support it in databases, you would wind up having non-trivial problems. Okay, and then finally, we'll talk about the notion of what if the user has a query in the database context, but you really want to act as if you are a used car salesman from the information retrieval scenario. So the user asks a query, which is an SQL query, okay, maybe a selection query, which has specific answers. But you really don't want to let them go. You want to give them all other pieces of information that may be potentially relevant to them. Okay, and in fact, to do that, that's exactly what IR guys do. That's what you wind up doing in terms of relevance. Now, how do you compute these notions of relevance in a strict database where the user query, if the user said, look, this is my only query, I'm pretty sure what I'm looking for, then the answer is just find the tuples which satisfy that query. But to the extent the user doesn't know whether their query is precise, and so they're looking for something and this is the best they could do in terms of giving a query, so then it's really an information retrieval sort of a scenario, and you want to use the query as the beginning of your dialogue with the user and start throwing to them more tuples than what they actually asked for, which is exactly what you did in IR. Okay? And then, so that's those are three things that I will talk about. There is a fourth one, which actually is a paper that is in CIDR 2005, from which actually some of the earlier slides, you know, the one that yellow stuff falling down, that's where I took that particular stuff from. And their argument there is, what, if any, if you are a query optimization guy, and in fact, that particular paper in CIDR is written by Surajit Chowdhury, and Gerhard Wycombe and somebody else, Raghu Ramakrishnan. And these guys are query optimization folks. Okay? And so their question is, well, you know, if you want to bring IR and databases together, what would be the real important query optimization challenges? Not surprisingly, they find that the query optimization challenges are this idea of doing top K query processing. And right now, in different systems, you would try to find techniques that would work in giving top K answers. But there is no overarching theory of query optimization that tries to support top K answers as against all answers. Okay. And so they were trying to argue for a certain type of query optimization theory, which would be taking Tapke query, Tapke answer support upfront from the beginning rather than doing it in the end. Okay. I have linked that paper from the readings. You can read it. Okay. And also, I think the beginning of that paper gives a lot more motivation. Those motivation slides I skipped. Those are all basically in that paper that describe for each sort of scenario, such as biological databases. Why would you need to bring in IR and DB together? Okay. So, if you need any more motivation. Okay. So, any questions? Okay, so I'll start talking about the first problem, which is handling text fields in relational database tuple. And I mentioned this in passing earlier, and I'm just going to do a little more on that right now. Okay. So the idea is you have oftentimes database relations, some of whose fields are textual. And normally, these fields exist normally currently in relational databases. What you do is you act as if those guys don't exist. So they can be brought out as part of query answers, but you cannot ask queries on them. Do you understand what I'm saying? So anytime you do a join, you better be doing joins on non-text attributes. Anytime you do a selection, you better be doing selections on non-text attributes. Okay, but then once a result is there, the rest of it. So, for example, I can find all the papers written before 1967, and then answers would also have abstracts, which are big chunks of text. That doesn't mean that I actually reasoned with the text. That only means that the text is added on to the rest of the tuple. The questions can only be asked on the non-text attribute. Okay. If at all people support any support of text information, it's mostly contains. You know, you might say, I think SQL standards allow this too, and XML query, XQuery is allowing this too, obviously, that, you know, this, and this abstract contains the following words, That's the best you can do. Okay, but now from the IR point of view, you would like to say things like, give me tuples here and tuples here such that they have similar values on these attributes, attribute A1 here and attribute A1 dash here. And those are both text, for example. Okay, that's basically the idea. Okay, so you want to be able to do that. And so there is a lot of work that's going on. One of the earliest works on this is World, which is, I mentioned this earlier, which is actually a pretty simple idea and it's easy to understand, which is basically they start with a slight extension of the data model, where the data model they have is called the simple text in relations, where certain attributes in the relation can be textual. They're not small text, they are actual textual. And you recognize it as that. Okay, so, and you are not going to treat them as stepchildren who are behind a curtain and who just be returned as part of the answer. You can ask queries on them. That's the idea. Okay, now query, once you have that, the query language is the same as SQL except for one extra predicate called similarity predicate. Okay, so for example, I might say that P, C1 and industry, and Q, C2 and website, such that C1 is similar to C2, where C1 is the name of the industry and C2 is probably the title of the website. Okay, and so you're trying to essentially get me the websites of particular industries, particular companies, where the titles may not exactly be using the same the same description that the company used to describe itself. We'll look at other examples in the context of movies, etc. So this is the piece. This is the similarity predicate. Okay. Now the question, of course, is how do you deal with the similarity predicate? And the obvious answer is extend the notion of selection and join to use similarity computation, And you know already what are the similarity metrics that work for text, and these are these vector space similarity metrics. Okay, so you use those. So similarity measured in terms of vector similarity over the text attributes. So the joint tuples are output in a ranked form with the rank proportional to the similarity. That's it. Okay, so if they're equivalent, then the rank is. So you can think of the each joint tuple can have in essence one, which means it would have been the actual answer if you didn't care about if you removed similar and put an equal there. And any number less than one, those are less and less similar. And you want to show the tuples to the user, you know, sorted in the order of similarity. That's the idea. Okay. So it's a neat idea, very simple idea. This is one of these things like, you know, you do this much work here, and certain corollaries just happen. You don't need to do anything new. You know already what is a vector space similarity. One of the interesting things is when the paper came along, it had to be twice the length for the ideas that it had, because it had to be understood by IR folks who don't understand databases and database folks who don't understand what vector similarity is. So you preliminary work one, which is vector similarity, preliminary work two, which is database query optimization. So it's nice. And then my work, which is just little different. Okay. But it was an interesting way of combining two different pieces of two different streams of work. And now the neat idea, except the important problem, the implementation issue, again, is how do you generate tuples in the order of their similarity? Okay, because what happens is the moment you put similar as against equal, most of your join ordering ideas, but to the extent you guys remember any join ordering ideas in the traditional database optimization, you can, for example, estimate what is the size of a join and use that to order. So one of the most interesting things is if I have a query which involves joining five relations. Okay, then there are orders in which you should join such that you could do much less work, and there are orders in which you can join these five relations such that you will wind up doing a lot more work, with the answer being the same. It's a question of how many tuples that you wind up carrying around in the intermediate stages. Okay, so join ordering is one of these big things that you talk about in the query optimization. And you know, you wind up doing the joins in, you know, you, the issue there is using the selectivity statistics, figure out the right order to join this. And if you have k relations being joined, then there are k factorial orders in which you can join them. And some of them are much better than others, and you're trying to find the optimal one. Okay, now there's a lot of theory on that, and all of that just falls flat once you do similarity. Because everything is sort of kind of similar to everything else. Okay, I mean, you know, there are zeros, but more and more, if you have large enough textual attributes in both relations, you'll wind up having large, you know, most tuples will have non-zero similarity, joint similarity. And you still, and because of which, the estimates are all going to be out the window. And you don't know the right order to do in them. And on top of it, now you know that, in fact, the order in which you present them, it better be in the, I mean, it's better to generate tuples in the order in which they will be presented, rather than generate them all and sort them and then present them. Right? Now, this is all stuff that database query optimization doesn't take into consideration normally, traditional database query optimization. Okay? So those are the interesting issues. Okay. Basically, in the case of the guy who did this is William Cohen, who is an AI guy, and so he did A star search to generate. How many of you know A star search? Okay, good. So, you know, if you are in doubt, do A star search if you are an AI guy. And what they wound up doing is they used A star search to, generate tuples in the order of importance. I won't go into details other than to show how, the IDF way will help you. DF IDF weights will help you in doing this. Okay, but if you are interested, you know, there is a 50-page paper in Transactions and Information Systems, which is very surprising because the idea is so small that, you know, they must have to do a lot of extra description. You are welcome to read that paper. I did link a paper from the class page. It's only 3 pages long. It's short and sweet, but doesn't talk about the extra search idea. Okay. And again, having said this, this is the place where this other paper from CIDR, which I mentioned in passing earlier, it talks about some overarching query optimization framework which would take into account top K support from the beginning. Okay, if you are a query optimization person, you might want to look at that paper too. Okay, so here is a bunch of examples, a sort of a scenario for world. So suppose you have two relations. This is actually his own slide, William Cohen's slide. So you have two relations, review, which is movie title, review text, which is an archive of reviews, and then listing, which is theater, movie title, show times, which is another table. Okay, so you have these two tables, and you know, in fact, in their original work, the way he winds up doing this is he has a crawler which crawls this information, which another crawl, I mean, and also crawls this information, puts them in two different tables, and then supports query processing on top of it. So his view of information integration is you crawl individual pieces of information, put them in the right tables, and then support database query style, you know, database style query processing. Okay, so if you have these two tables, then so the kind of queries that they want to support are things like this. So find reviews of sci-fi comedies, basically, and so the query, SQL query would be from review select tuples where the review text is similar to sci-fi comedy. Okay. Now, in fact, you might have said the review text contains sci-fi comedy, which is contains, and you know, it's much better, you're much better off using similar, because we are essentially doing like a Google, I mean, a search engine query just for that part. Okay, and similarly, where is that particular sci-fi comedy playing? And so from review and listing, you select tuples where the title from the review is similar to the title from text, I mean, title from the listing, and the text contains sci-fi comedy. A text is similar to sci-fi comedy. Okay, now notice that this, the difference between this being similarity versus contained relation, if you have questions on that, you have taken the wrong course by now, because you know, if all we wanted to do is Boolean query processing, right, Boolean query processing, then you can essentially, that similarity would be handled in the Boolean model. And we have already spent, you know, days on, weeks on, trying to say that in the vector space models are much better. Okay, so that's what you want to do it here too. Okay. So now, these are the kinds of things that he basically hoped for. The Hitchhiker's Guide to Galaxy and The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Those are not equal, really speaking, but they're similar because, in particular, The will have a very low ID of weight and so will wind up being ignored during the vector similarity. Okay, so the obvious way that, you know, we're doing. So similarity is based on TF-IDF, where that basically means rare words are the most important words. And search for the high ranking answers uses the inverted indices. Inverted indices, so you know the weights of the words, and so you know that to get high rank, you want the weights, a high ranking word should be there in both places. So search through the inverted index in the order of high ranking words. If I didn't have any weights, then I will start with the. Okay, and ask my inverted index, tell me all the listings which have the in it. And it'll give me all the tuples, and then I can generate joins for all of them. Okay. So, however, if I actually do weighting, then basically this is just a graphical way of showing that hitchhikers, you will have much higher weight because it's likely to be not used anywhere else. Guide is going to have less weight because probably the word guide has been used in multiple tuples compared to this. Da would basically get killed. Most tuples will have the, and similarly the year numbers will get killed. This is just something that you take it for granted, but it's useful. You know, IDF information is now suddenly useful. Now, what you do is you look at the inverted index in the order of the high frequency, high weight terms. Inverted index gives you all the words and, you know, where are all the tuples. And these numbers obviously are the tuple numbers. These are the foreign keys into this table. Do you understand that? I mean, these are foreign keys into this table. So you know which table, which row has hitchhiker in it. And here are all the rows which have the in it. Okay. So you use that direction. Basically, you look at the, so if you have only, you know, if it turns out that there's only one high frequency, high weight term, then you already know how to generate the best answers first, because if you look at that word first, then you would win. One bit of extra information you can learn if you read the bigger paper is when you have conjunction of terms, how do you so there is hitchhiker, and then the next bit is guide and galaxy. Okay, you are using these, and then as you are computing these, you are computing the joint tuples. And then for each of those joint tuples, you are computing the overall similarity measure. Okay? So this stuff pretty much is a kind of a blend of database query processing and text query processing. You know, you have inverted indices, you have IDF, and you have joins. Okay? So they did a lot of, various kinds of testing on this stuff, and something that we take for granted is what they did, which is they did the precision recall curve. If you are a database query processing person, you would not care about precision recall. You just care about time taken. Okay. Now, what's interesting, this is, I think, is a 1997 paper. Now, you look at lots and lots of database papers, they'll have precision recall curve as against just time for the response time. Okay, and it's kind of understood that, but you know, these are one of the first guys who, in a database scenario, realize that, you know, you have to deal with precision recall. Okay. I like this because they talk about the advantage, the contributions of World, and I like the last contribution the most. So World worked on a number of small applications. It could link many data types reasonably well without too much engineering. And it generated numerous papers. You know, it was one of the first projects which basically bridged DB and IR. And so, you know, you can see how many papers they have. And in fact, one of the nice things in working in these bridge areas is until the two areas realize it, you can publish in both areas, you know, because you need everybody to read. So you first publish in the database papers because database guys need to read it, and publish in JAIR because that's a top AI journal and AI people need to read it. It's good, okay. It wasn't a particularly hard idea, but it's the contribution really is much more in terms of bringing together two different, different areas. Okay, some of the problems are, in fact, this is one of the main problems. World basically defines similarity in terms of TF-IDF. Okay, that makes sense for text documents. It already stops making sense for movie names. Because oftentimes in movie names, it's not the extra articles that you throw in, but it's the misspellings that you wind up doing. Okay, so you want to be able to say hitchhiker guide to galaxy, where one guy writes galaxy GALAXIE and the other guy writes galaxy GALAXY. Okay, and you need to say they are the same. So similarity now has to take into account string similarity rather than text similarity. And so in fact, one of the things that these guys have been doing ever since the World paper is, so for example, this is your bigger picture, and so the issues are, the items are being linked in terms of the query by the joining operation, and the join results are being produced incrementally. That's another interesting point. And a third interesting point is similarity is defined in terms of TF-IDF similarity. Of these, essentially, one obvious way you can generalize this work is change the TF-IDF similarity to some other similarity, whatever is the right notion of similarity for what you're trying to do. Okay. And in fact, they spent a lot of time in talking after this work on string similarity measure. Yes, sir. Which one? That's true too. But I think the most important thing is you can't just stick to TF-IDF similarity. You need to consider other notions of similarity, both aggregate and in fact, to deal with strings, you just need to talk about string similarity metrics, which we haven't talked about in this class that much. Did I mention string similarity metrics at all? Notions of edit distance, for example. Okay. So yeah, so I mentioned it twice now. So I already increased the TF component of it. They actually look at some variations on edit distance measures. And the other thing, by the way, for string similarity is n-gram idea. Okay, so you define a string in terms of, you know, you have shingles for text documents. I mentioned shingles, right? And n-gram is a shingle at the string level. Okay, so if I give you a big string, 15 characters long, you know, a 3-gram representation of this string would be first three letters starting from the first one, three letters starting from the second one, three letters starting from the third one, three letters starting from the fourth one, and so on. Okay, so this one 15 character string is now corresponding to a set of 3 grams. And then another 15 character variation of this string corresponds to another set of 3 grams. Now you can actually think of these 3 grams as words and do TF-IDF on them. Okay? And if you did this in a machine learning course, you would call it string kernels, as some of you know. In essence, this is the way you define similarity between strings. It's one way of defining similarity between strings. One specific way is just in terms of edit distance. Another is the n-gram similarity is defining, in essence, the edit distance indirectly. If you have too many changes between these words, then many, many n-grams would wind up being different. If there's only like one letter that's different, then most of the n-grams here and most of the n-grams here will be the same. A couple would be different. So in fact, you don't even do TF-IDF. You actually do, for n-gram based distance, you do Jaccard similarity, which is intersection of these two sets divided by the union of these two sets. The size of the intersection of these two sets divided by the size of the union of these two sets. Okay? So this is a neat way to actually describe, you know, talk about similarity between strings. And in fact, if you use this n-gram method, you can pretty much combine text and strings at the same time. If you have like a medium-sized text document, you know, taking spaces into account, space is a character too. So I can define k grams, you know, where some of the grams will have space in between. And you do Jaccard on them, you would be fine. Okay, so that's the string-based similarity metrics, and they could use that, and in fact they spend a lot of time talking about different string similarity metrics and which are good, and they wind up using those. Okay. I also like this idea that engrams are nothing but shingles. Our shingles are nothing but engrams in terms of words. And, you know, to talk about duplication between two pieces of text where, you know, not even really dumb students would copy everything word for word. They will introduce a couple of their own sentences in between in highly plagiarized material. And so if you do equality check, it's not going to work. But you do shingle check. A large number of shingles are going to be the same. And in fact, duplicate detection on the web is done, you know, using shingles. And you guys know this actually, apparently this is now, pretty much everybody does. There's this Turnitin system. How many of you guys know Turnitin system? Yeah, Turnitin system does essentially, you know, it's meant for, you know, yet another review of Shakespeare's Twelfth Night. A million people have already written it, and, you know, there is this humongous interest in just, to heck with it, let's copy over five different guys and put it together. And Turnitin system, in essence, has a large number of previously written reviews of the various classics. And, you know, my nephew, who is in 10th grade, was visiting us last week, and he was showing me his review of The Great Gatsby, and which he had to submit through Turnitin. And when you submit it, then Turnitin first gives a grade saying how similar is it to any of the known reviews of Great Gatsby, and then the teacher reads it. Okay, and obviously it's going to do shingle-based analysis of duplication. And shingle-based analysis is very similar at the text level. What is shingle-based analysis at the text level is n-gram-based analysis at the string level. Okay. Okay. So that's all about subjoins. The second one that I'm going to talk today, looks like that's the only thing that I get to complete today, and then next class we'll do the third part. The second one is supporting keyword search in databases. Okay. This, again, I'm looking at a very specific paper. There are lots and lots of other papers based on, you know, the text similarity stuff that World did. It's the beginning, and then lots of other papers are there. Okay, but you get an idea as to how this stream of work goes. And this is another thing which started this area, and there are some other, in fact, there are some other papers in this direction too, but I think it's worth understanding at least one, okay? So you have, this is a DBLP database, you know? So DBLP is not going to just have individual bibliographic records all stored as row after row after row. Instead, it would take the bibliographic records and normalize them into small tables such that by joining these tables correctly, you will get all the information you want, right? So, for example, here is a way information about a paper may be remembered. So paper ID is Chakrabarty SD98, paper name, and the rest of the paper tuple, okay? And then, now the Chakrabarty SD98 is really is a number for that paper. It's a social security number of that paper. So it winds up being the key for that paper. Okay. Now, in this is the author table. This is the rights table. Okay. The rights table says this author wrote this paper. Okay. Now, notice that the author is Saumin C. In this case, actually, that just winds up being again one more key. Okay. And then he wrote Chakrabarty SD98, which is another key. Now, the interesting thing is when I put this in this tuple, in essence, I'm making a link to this tuple here, right? In database terminology, this is called a foreign key. So you actually, you know, this is a foreign key for this relation right now. And similarly, this is a foreign key into this relation. Okay? And then, you know, for example, so there's a rights tuple here, there's an author tuple. Author tuple takes the author ID, gives the author name, where the author lives, all that stuff. This is a reasonable way of splitting the bibliography record. If you normalize it, this is a reasonable way you would have split it. And you actually felt good about doing this. Now, my question is, Soumen Sunita is my question. It's a keyword. Now, the keyword queries can actually wind up having some values from one attribute in table T1 and some values in another attribute in table T5. It's not a simple selection query. Do you see what I'm saying? And it would have been a selection query if you basically renormalize and unnormalize the database and remembered each bibliography record as a document. Then keywords can be supported directly on these documents using TF-IDF methods. Okay, now this should make you feel kind of crazy, because I spent a large part of the semester saying, if only we have structure, we could be very happy. And now I'm saying, now that we have structure, we'll undo the structure so that our dumb users would be happier with us. Okay? If they want to ask keyword queries, we'll give you a keyword answer. Okay? So the interesting thing, of course, is you have a database really should be seen as a graph. Okay? Each tuple from each table is a node in this graph. And foreign key relationships between tuples from various tables generate the edges. Okay? And so if I give you a keyword query such as Soumen Sunita, what I'm looking for really is a subgraph of this database graph, which first of all contains Soumen and Sunita in its nodes, so they are covered. And second of all, there are many such subgraphs, and you want to give the best subgraphs out. Now, this is obvious if, in fact, each bibliography record is written as a separate text file. Okay? It's only harder because it's a database. Okay? So, you know, this is, you know, when they wrote this paper, this is their motivation. Keyword search has become enormously successful. When you make a database available, people still want to use keyword search on them, not SQL search. And so since your users want, you know, keyword search, let's see what is involved in it. And upfront it looks, oh, keyword search should be easy. But here's a tricky point where what you did to make database query processing and database maintenance good, this normalization idea, winds up biting you when you try to support keyword query. Now, of course, you don't want to give up on the good things. So you still support keyword queries on this database without unnormalizing it. Okay. And this is, I like this. SQL is not appropriate for casual users, and I think it's barely appropriate for any non-casual users, but definitely it's not good for casual users. Okay. Yeah, this is actually, these guys did this in IIT Bombay, so there are a large number of Indian context in this. So on a railway reservation database, I might just say Mumbai, Bangalore, which are two cities in India. Now, when I say it, normally what I would mean is I want connections from Mumbai to Bangalore. Okay, and you know, you need to find me the right tuples, which will give me that information. And that might involve actually joining over multiple subtables. Okay, and you know, they have other examples like this. Okay, this stuff obvious. This is basically what I was saying. The related data is split across multiple tuples due to normalization, and you don't want to unnormalize it while still supporting reasonable query processing. Okay. And then the other interesting thing is what joins you are supposed to do is determined on the fly, right? Because in essence, what's interesting is I will actually explain to you how this system works in the level of, let's think of database as a graph and look for subgraphs in it. Now, to actually do it efficiently, you don't generate the database graph. If you do this, you unnormalize the heck out of it already. Okay, you, in essence, using the foreign keys, you would efficiently generate the other parts of the database that would be required to combine this keyword and this other keyword. And it's sort of a search in this database. In fact, you start from each keyword, try to find a path. Things like spreading activation, things like A star search, all of these would work. Except it's not an extensional graph. You know, you actually have, using the foreign keys, you have to generate the pieces of the graph as you need. And so that would be called joining. Okay? So the interesting point is, in fact, you would do joins in answering these queries, but those joins are decided on the fly as the query processing is going on. Unlike normal queries where the description of the query itself tells you what joins to make. Now, the other interesting thing is tuples can be connected. Actually, let's suppose it. Okay, so the basic model is a graph like this. So tuples are nodes, and the foreign keys are edges. Okay, and the answer would be a subgraph of this graph. Each answer would be a subgraph of this graph. And so, for example, I might, if I said Sudarshan and Roy, then this subgraph is an answer to it. Now notice that, you have to kill this temptation saying, well, if I had a paper, the entire paper in front of me saying Sudarshan, Roy, title, year, it's just a selection query on those two keywords. Yes, but you don't have the entire paper in front of you. What you have is these tables with the foreign key relation. And you just incrementally unrolled the normalization, just the parts of the normalization that you needed to, so that you can give the answers to the user. Okay? So think of this as, so you find the subgraph like this as an answer. And each such subgraph would be a separate answer. And in fact, it's not even really a subgraph, it's a subtree of this, it's a tree of this graph. And what you're trying to find is multiple trees, and for each tree there is a weight. And then you want to generate these trees in the order of their weight. So for example, if I have the DBLP database and I have a query called query optimization, yes, you can give all the answers, but in as much as you're generating answers piece by piece and you have this notion of weights for the answers, you might want to give, for example, the most important query optimization paper first. Second most next, third most next. Now the question, of course, is how do you decide what is the most important query optimization? You know, if I ask the query Bush, what is the most important Bush page? You are determining it for me every day. You know, Google is determining it for me. Using what? Backlinks. A way you can actually decide what is the most important query optimization paper in this context is again using backlinks. Look at the query optimization paper that has the most number of foreign key backlinks using the cited relation. That's the citation analysis. Okay? So let me give you a little more depth into this. So each potential solution is a rooted weighted tree, where the nodes of the tree are tuples from the tables. And nodes can have weights. And the node weight can be defined in terms of the page rank style notion. How many people are pointing to this tuple using foreign key relation? Yes?
Why do you say the
paper actually talks about how to kill the circularity. So that's why they wind up only talking about. Okay. Much of the discussion I'm doing on this paper definitely is an advertisement for you to go and read the rest of the paper if you're interested. This is how conference presentations are likely done. Okay. I'm not giving you all the details. All the details would take a long time. Okay. But I have put the links to the real papers and you can go and look it up. It's a good question though. The point I'm actually much more interested in making sure you understand is these connections across different pieces of the class that in the previous one you did the TF-IDF connection to databases. Here you're doing link mining connection. You know, PageRank is being reapplied back to databases. Wherever there are links, you can do backlink analysis. Okay? Except one thing that these guys do is they consider different backlinks with different weights. So for each backlink, they have a weight. So cited backlink has a higher weight than certain other types of backlinks, for example. Okay, and that's allowed. So that's like PageRank basically saying, if you put, you know, in web, all links are just a simple href links. Whereas here, you do know the origin of the link and the destination of the link. And so each, you know, a foreign key between table 1 and table 2 is a different link than a foreign key between table 3 and table 2. And so I can give different weights to these links. It wasn't possible in the web. If you wanted to do it in the web, in fact, the last time we ever did that, differentiation of weight for links in the web scenario was in the first exam where I asked that question where, you know, how do you make sure that irrelevant links are not counted by the authorities hubs? And then you take the anchor text and the query and decide how important each link is. You don't do this for PageRank because you don't really know what the query is upfront. And the link analysis is done upfront. Okay, so I want you to understand these connections from other parts of the course to this problem, much more than the exact details, which you can read by reading the paper. So what they wind up actually doing is not even anything like PageRank. They don't do eigenvalues, nothing. All they do is just a simple backlink. Because, partly because there is very little circularity in databases. Okay, at most there is a cited by table which cites you guys, that's it. Okay, so what they wind up doing is they just take the back degree and they wind up taking the log of the back degree so that, you know, it monotonically increases, but it doesn't make too much of a distinction between very highly, I mean, it's like 10,000 citations and 10,005 citations mean the same. One citation and two citations mean a big difference. That's what log does for you. Okay, so that's the node weights. This is all about tuples weights. Then you can also provide edge weights. Okay, and in some sense, actually, this edge weight is used in the node weight computation, but I just did that first. Edge weight is for each type of foreign key link, you can give a number corresponding to the weight of that link. And this is what I was saying, different foreign keys can have different links, and who decides that? Database guy decides that. If you have no other clue, just give them all the same weight. But they basically, in the bibliography, for example, they say paper writes link is seen as stronger than paper cites link. Okay, now that is making an assumption on what kind of queries are likely to come and what would be the good answers to this query. And it's a domain-specific decision that the writers of bank system, this is called a bank system, and that's what they wind up thinking. And then so, and the other thing is that tuples in this tree must cover the keywords. So if I give you keywords, then an answer is a subtree such that all the keywords are covered by tuples in this tree. But it's not required that every tuple in the tree must cover a particular keyword. In fact, oftentimes one of the points they make is, actually I didn't have this here, but they talk about these nice anecdotal queries where they ask two last names, I think Stonebreaker and somebody else, who are both popular database authors, database paper authors, but they never wrote anything together. So there's not a single record where they are actually appearing together. However, this system winds up giving a subtree which involves a paper that Stonebreaker writes with Patricia Seltzer, who is one of the people who did the system or work. And then another paper that Seltzer writes with this second guy. And that is a small subgraph within which these two guys are connected. And they don't have to do anything different to answer this. Basically, they're always looking for subgraphs where the tuples cover queries and the weight of the subgraph, the higher the weight, the more relevant it is. Okay? So relevance of the tree is based on its weight. And the big, big thing that I'm not going to discuss here is how do you, so given a bunch of subtrees like this, you know how to compute their weights and decide which is better. The much more interesting issue is how to generate the highly weighted subtrees incrementally upfront. So it's the idea of, you know, there's this general point that all intelligence is taking the test part of generate test debug and putting it into the generate. Okay, so you can always generate junk and see if it is an answer or not. The tricky, a good algorithm tries to take as much of test part into generate part. So you can do sorting by making a permutation and see if it is a sorted permutation. And those are nicely, n-factor algorithms. Good sorting algorithms take the test part and push it into the generate part. So the question is, how do you do it here? How do you take this, the notion of weight of the subtree, and push it into the way the subtrees are generated? And it winds up being very related to graph search using, A star search style algorithms or spreading activation algorithms. Okay, spreading activation is just this idea where you start with one node in the graph and put a big amount of charge here. Start with another node in this graph, put another big amount of charge here. And this charge is then given to its neighbors in an exponentially decaying fashion. And neighbors which wind up getting both the markers will define a path between them. That's one way of doing this thing. Okay? I might discuss a little more about this, but that winds up being the actual query optimization issue that these guys do. Okay? So, we'll come back next class and talk about the third one, which is the imprecise query.